This is Movie Fighters, the show where Chris Sims and I, Matt Wilson, we watch movies,
and which we beat them up. Which we movies? We watch UVs.
I may be a little excited that we are finally coming to an end of the Left Behind trilogy.
Quadrilogy. Trilogy plus one for us.
Quadrilogy, which is not a word. Of films.
Tetralogy.
That's right. That's what it should be. We're watching Left Behind, World at War.
That's right, everybody. If you are just joining us, maybe you read the nice little write-up that we had in the AV Club's Podmass. This is actually part four of a four-part saga where Matt and I are watching every film in the Left Behind series, including the 2014 remake that is about an airplane. That is not, like, that is barely about the Rapture. It's mostly about Nicolas Cage wanting to have sex with this really hot stewardess.
Yeah, it's a disaster plane movie. The Kirk Cameron series, however.
Oh boy, that is about the Rapture.
That is 100% Rapture.
And this is our final tribulation, as we once again ride with the Tribulation Force.
That's right. Now, let's go back through the series quickly. Okay. Let's do a quick recap. The first one we watched was the first Left Behind with Kirk Cameron, which was not a good movie.
And he played Cameron Buck Williams.
That's right.
Ace reporter for GNN.
We did not like that movie, but it was enjoyable in a completely batshit insane way.
Fair. Very fair. Like, again, when that movie was over, I was ready to watch the sequel. I was ready to go into my fourth hour of talking about Left Behind after we finished recording that episode.
Second, we watched the remake, question mark?
Reboot, I guess?
Of Left Behind, the first one, which only adapts maybe the first third of the first book, starring Nicolas Cage.
And Nicolas Cage played ace pilot Rayford Steele.
That's right. And we enjoyed that movie in spite of itself, in spite of being absolutely awful, in spite of there being an envelope written on it, "This is the worst day of my life," which is a detail we didn't even get to in the episode.
When I send in my rent, I always put that on the inside of the envelope.
After that, last time on the show, we watched Left Behind 2, Tribulation Force, and the quality took a steep nosedive.
It took a hit. Now, the quality of the movie took a hit. I would say the enjoyability of the movie mostly remained about the same, kind of dipping in and out depending on whether Kirk Cameron was trying to get you to admit that you were a sinner who needs Jesus.
I think it got much more boring, much more aggressive in its proselytizing.
Yes.
And less enjoyable.
Yeah, but it also got way weirder. Like, way weirder.
I mean, that's fair.
Like, the first movie, the Rapture happened. Regardless of your religious beliefs, that's a weird event. That is something that does not usually happen, right? Like, millions of people do not generally vanish from the face of the earth. But the movie, more or less, proceeded, I don't want to say logically, because that is the wrong word. People's reactions to that within the world of the movie generally made sense, right? Or do I have the rose-colored glasses on at this point?
I think we may be falling into Stockholm Syndrome a little bit.
Well, look, we've been at this for 2 months. With Tribulation Force, that movie goes off the rails. There's dudes breathing fire. There's an angel, maybe, who stops time by singing Amazing Grace. There's, you know, Nikolai Carpathia, who is the, proclaims him, like, first says religion is terrible, then literally in the next scene introduces a new religion, and then declares himself God, and then has himself declared the Messiah.
But it doesn't work out for him.
No, it doesn't.
That movie ends with him, like, shaking his fist at literal God and saying, "This isn't over."
No, Matt, that is not what he's saying.
He's saying, this isn't over.
This isn't over. This is my time.
You'll be happy to know that the actor who plays Nikolai Carpathia, Gordon Curry, returns for yet another turn.
Oh, good.
As Nikolai Carpathia in Left Behind World at War. In fact, most of the original cast returns for this movie. We've still got Brad Johnson as Rayford Steele. Kirk Cameron is still playing Buck Williams. We've still got Janaea Stevens as Chloe. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea Noble is hanging around as Hattie Durham.
Now, Hattie Durham, if you listened to this episode without going back and listening to the first three episodes, she is the flight attendant who, the day after she quit being a flight attendant, was named personal secretary to the president of the world.
Yes. Now, the one major addition to the cast in this movie is Lou Gossett Jr.
Now, Matt, before you tell me his name, can I guess what his name is going to be?
Sure.
Okay, we've got Buck Williams.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Ray Steele.
Yep.
There was another one, too. My guess at Louis Gossett Jr.'s name is Brett Handgun.
It is actually not that crazy of a name.
Really?
His name is Gerald Fitzhugh.
Okay, that's disappointing.
Dirk Burton is the name we were trying to think of.
Dirk Burton, yes.
Lou Gossett Jr. is President Gerald Fitzhugh. Here's the weird thing about his character.
Wait. He's the president of what? Of America? Of
the United States.
Okay, because now, how does that work? Because...
Exactly.
Because Nikolai Carpathia rebuilt the world in the image of 10 kingdoms.
Yeah, there should be, like, a steward of the Kingdom of North America, right? Who answers to President of the World Nikolai Carpathia. Mm-hmm. But apparently, the Office of President of the United States still exists. And it is held by Lou Gossett Jr. in 2005, 3 years before an African-American person would hold that office.
So you're saying that the Left Behind films are, in fact, prophecy, that you believe in 100%?
Yes, I believe that is what I'm saying. Now,
okay.
There's one major character who is played by a different actor this time around. Because Clarence Gilliard Jr.,
no,
who was originally supposed to reprise his role of Bruce Barnes,
no,
could not return due to a scheduling conflict. Here is some more information from Wikipedia. As a devout Catholic, he has also said his priest was happy he did not reprise the role, as the films portray a premillennial rapturist theology that is in opposition to the Catholic Church's amillennial teachings.
I have literally no idea what that means.
Also, citation needed on that one.
So we don't get the... I'm going to say it. He was the first recipient of the movie fighter's lifetime pass.
That's true.
He is the first person we have seen...
Because he's a diehard.
In 2 years of doing the show that I said, that dude gets a lifetime pass. Immune to criticism, he was Theo in Die Hard.
He's not back. He's been replaced by actor Arnold Pinnock.
Now, do we know anything about Arnold Pinnock?
We do not. He's in a lot of movies as various characters. Character actor, worker. English.
Interesting. You think he's going to do a voice?
Could. Well, it says he's Canadian, but he was born in England. So I don't know, but...
Can I tell you that I just clicked on Arnold Pinnock in Netflix, which... If you would like to watch these movies along with us, all four of the Left Behind movies are available on Netflix. You can pause this when we do and watch it and come back and pretend to discuss it with us. I clicked on Arnold Pinnock's name, and he was in a movie that came out in 2001 that says, from the makers of Left Behind the movie, it's called Judgment. And that is about an attorney who undergoes a challenging and dangerous religious transformation when he's picked to defend a mysterious Christian woman in court. And Corbin Burnson's in that. Jessica Steen is in that. Mr. T is on the cover.
Jessica Steen also in this movie.
So these are like the Left Behind repertory players.
This is the Cloud 10 repertory players. One thing I should note before we get going. there is not a Left Behind book called World at War. There's Tribulation Force, and then the following book is called Nikolai. This movie apparently adapts the final two chapters of Tribulation Force, the book, and the first four or five chapters of Nikolai.
Oh, so, okay, interesting.
So already the timeline between the books and the movies are being changed quite a bit. And according to Wikipedia, there are massive, massive differences between this movie and the novel.
Well, here is my question. Are we going to get, like, an end of the Left Behind story in this? Because the weird thing about Tribulation Force was that they say in the beginning of Tribulation Force, hey, everybody, Nikolai Carpathia is the Antichrist, and he is going to win. So, which kind of removes all of the tension from the film. I was wondering, what kind of satisfactory ending are we going to get from these movies? Now I wonder if we're even going to get an ending at all, or if they just were going to make a Left Behind 4 that they never got around to.
Because Tim LaHaye sued Cloud 10 Pictures. Yes. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to watch and see. I feel like Tribulation Force had what should have been the ending to the whole thing, because Nikolai Carpathia gets shown up and embarrassed, and that's about the worst you can do to him.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, he really shouldn't have just gotten on the plane after introducing the guy who was going to declare him to be the Messiah.
Ground we've already covered, but true. All right,
Matt, one last thing before we get to watching the movie. I have taken to asking you this on recent episodes. What's your snack situation?
I don't have any snacks. We're recording this at an unusual time. We're recording it on Monday night instead of Sunday afternoon. So I've just had dinner. I'm quite full. So I'm gonna leave the snacks alone this time.
That's a good plan. It is post-dinner time, but I did save a little room because I thought it might be fun to do some snacking. You hear that?
Hear I that? Do.
I'm going old school, Matt. That's a bag of M&M's.
Oh, M&M's. That's classic movie snacks.
Classic movie snacks.
Okay, we're going to get started in 1 minute. I want to read the Netflix summary of this movie. They are getting more and more general and less detailed the further we get into this series. The summary for World at War is, after a global catastrophe that saw millions vanish, one man unites the world. Some believe he is not their ideal leader, but rather the Antichrist. That could be the description for the previous movie. And I want to read the top review. 39 out of 40 members found this review helpful.
Okay.
A great movie.
Oh, good.
The acing by Lou Gossett Jr. was phenomenal. You might say, how can it end that way? But since the movie is based on fact and the world hasn't ended yet, there can't be an ending. Only speculation of the exact way the world will end. And I imagine the makers of this film want us to resort to reading the Bible, resort to it, and praying to God instead of worrying about the end. And I definitely agree with them. Have a blessed day, everyone. Smiley face.
So this person is suggesting that the only way this movie could be improved is if it was made after the end of the world.
Yep. That's the only way you could have an ending, because it's based on fact. But recall the last movie we watched and the top review there, which was just how to watch these movies in order. This one says the acing, which I assume is acting, by Lou Gossett Jr. is great and has just like hilarious stuff about how there can't be an ending. So I'm actually a little more hopeful about this one than the last one. I may be misguided in that hope.
Okay, official prediction. What if this movie like gets to the end? You know, we get 90 minutes in, and then we just cut to a shot, like the same shot of a planet blowing up that's in Star Wars. And they're just like, and that's the end?
Like Alderaan's blowing up?
Yeah, but as Earth, standing in for Earth.
I'm fine with it. I don't think Lucasfilm would be that into it, but I'd be cool with it. All right, we're going to watch Left Behind World at War. We're going to take a quick little musical interlude here. We're going to take a long break. You can take a short one. However, you can watch along with us on Netflix, if you please. Man, I hope people's clothes fit this time, but I doubt they will. We'll be back in just a minute to talk about this movie. Be back in a minute. Okay, we are back from watching Left Behind World at War, and a nice little step up from Tribulation Force.
In some ways.
In some ways.
I mean...
Really bad makeup and questionable CGI. But
it is not as bonkers as Tribulation Force, and yet completely as bonkers as Tribulation Force in many ways. Folks, first thing I want to say, Chappie done done it again. Louis Gossett Jr. on point in this movie. Everything I wanted.
Yeah.
Second thing I want to say.
Like, here's the crazy thing. I thought that Netflix review that said Louis Gossett's acting is really good was just some person, like, trying to sell this movie. But they're right. He's really good in this.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to skip ahead too much, but he, you know, he comes to Christ in this movie, and his conversion feels so much more real than anybody else in this movie, including Kirk Cameron.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I have never seen a movie that had so many places where somebody should have been like, oh shit, and then cut off by an explosion that did not do it once. Because there are like 8 places in this movie that should have happened.
Okay, so before we get into everything that does happen in this movie and all the places that somebody should be saying, oh shit, I want to talk about the director of this movie.
Oh, please, let's do it.
Craig Bexley is his name. So he's the third director for the third movie. And we talked about the previous two directors being workmen, right? They were in this to work. And they did a lot of movies for the sake of working. Craig Bexley, first of all, had a career as an actor in the 60s and 70s. Let me list off some of his acting credits. The Parallax View, Rollerball, SWAT, The Warriors.
Who was he in The Warriors?
I don't know who he played in The Warriors. I'll have to go look that up. It doesn't give his role. It just says The Warriors. And here are some of his directing credits.
Was this, Matt, are you telling me that we just watched a movie potentially directed by a baseball fury?
Potentially. Let me look up his entire filmography and see what we got. But I want to read off some of his directing credits, too. He directed Sniper 2 with Tom Berenger. He's directed a bunch of episodes of TV. He directed an episode of Leverage.
Really?
Yeah. He directed a movie called The Avenging Angel. He directed Stone Cold, starring Brian Bosworth. He directed Dark Angel, starring Dolph Lundgren. He directed the wonderful Action Jackson, starring Carl Weathers.
And Craig T. Nelson.
I kind of unabashedly love that movie.
Oh, that movie's great. Like, that is an amazing... It is amazing that we have not done that movie for Movie Fighters.
And he was the stunt coordinator on Predator.
Yeah, Predator! If it bleeds, we can kill it, Predator.
That's nuts.
If you look at the stuff he did stunts on, he did stunts on the A-Team. He did stunts on Rockford Files. Like, he drove cars on Rockford Files. Like, yeah. And did the car stunts. That's amazing. Like, I gotta say, I am a Craig Bexley fan.
His character in The Warriors is just called Punk.
Okay, so he is not a baseball fury. I'm sorry I got everyone's hopes up. That's on me. I guess what we're trying to get at with this Craig Bexley resume that we're reading off is that this movie is actually well-directed. Well-directed, well-shot. They clearly are doing second takes of scenes they never would have done second takes on in the first two movies.
Well, I think a big part of it is the lighting.
Yes.
Because the previous two movies had very flat TV-style lighting.
Yeah.
And this one does not have that. It also has very, very extreme close-ups in every close-up shot.
Really, really extreme close-ups.
Which doesn't really do any favors to the actors.
It does not.
But it makes the movie seem bigger and more like a movie.
Yeah, that, I guess that's the thing. Like, with the exception of anything that is CG, which is all hilariously terrible, this actually looks like a real movie, which the other two didn't. The other two looked like, you know, they would be shown on the Hallmark Channel.
We'll get to the two big problems with the production quality of this movie, probably in the low points.
Don't get your hopes up too much. This movie's not great, except that, to be honest, half of it is pretty solid.
I'm just going to read off the first paragraph of the Wikipedia summary of this. Okay.
I'll fill in as you go.
Well, this is just for the opening scene.
Okay.
Set 18 months after the events of the second film, we were wondering how far from the second movie this was.
Okay, so the Tribulation Force was what, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
And this is a year and a half into the post-Revelation world.
Yeah. An attack takes place. United States President Gerald Fitzhugh, that's Louis Gossett Jr., videotapes his confession. Afterwards, he looks out the window as a shadowy figure arrives in the background. That's how this movie opens.
Yeah, it opens in a bombed out White House with Louis Gossett Jr. sitting in the Oval Office, pointing a camcorder at his face, giving a opening speech about how, you know, we all should have seen it coming.
It's weirdly exactly the same structure as the movie Double Indemnity.
Okay.
Here's where it falls apart, though, because the Louis Gossett narration right at the beginning of the movie, where he's talking about how the world has fallen apart, and then we see that it's him recording himself. What if that narration had gone through the entire movie?
Oh, that would have been great.
That's what Double Indemnity does, and that's what this movie should have done, but we lose the narration pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, look, I am pro Louis Gossett Jr., I am pro Louis Gossett Jr. voiceover. I am very into that happening.
Yeah. We get the sense that he's going to tell us the story of everything that's happened, but it kind of just cuts back to a week ago.
Yes. 1 week before, where there is a daring raid on what appears to be a Bible warehouse by a bunch of people wearing ski masks.
Yes.
Who are raiding this Bible warehouse to steal these Bibles that have been gathered up and boxed, presumably to be sent off to be destroyed.
Presumably. And they kind of look like the Foot Clan.
They do. Like, they look exactly like the Foot Clan.
They're wearing...
There's so much in this movie that looks exactly like Ninja Turtles. It is a recurring theme.
They're wearing balaclavas and all black. And they don't have weapons. They're kind of fighting a little bit, and they're stealing these Bibles, getting them out of there.
One of my favorite lines happens in this part, which is when somebody gets in a truck to drive off with the Bibles. He goes, "Where are they going?" And the guy goes, "These are going to Utah," which I feel like is a not-so-subtle dig at Mormons. It's like, hey, you guys are going to be left behind. You're going to need these Bibles. Like, you need to not be too into that Book of Mormon thing. Like, we got the real stuff here.
So we quickly find out that this group of people in balaclavas is actually the Tribulation Force,
which is their official name now. By the way, it is the team name.
They have graduated from Fight Club to Project Mayhem.
They really have.
They are now going out and just doing freedom fighter shit and taking, you know, these confiscated Bibles. We know this because we see Chloe take her balaclava off, and I think she's talking to Ray at this point.
I think so.
The whole group is Ray, Chloe, Buck, Bruce the Pastor, and Chris Smith.
And now, you might remember Chris from the last movie where Chris got saved. It was amazing.
That's right. But Chris is going to meet his maker very shortly, because as the rest of the team absconds with these Bibles, he gets indeed left behind at the Bible compound. And the soldiers of the global community, apparently, I guess they can't call them the UN anymore.
I don't know why, because they spent two movies making the UN this huge specter in the way that, you know, conspiracy theorists always do. But yeah, now they're just called the GC. They're the global community, which I guess is the what Nikolai is the president of.
Yeah, it's the royalty-free version of the UN. These two global community soldiers, they grab Chris, they take his mask off, and they start asking him, who do you work for? Well, I think first they shoot him, right?
Well, they shoot him, like, they shoot him in the back with a machine gun. And he's, like, laying on the ground, like, you know, doing a protracted death scene. Like, and there's a guy, like, with a gun on him. He's like, who do you work for? And I'm like, okay, you've already shot this guy and he has clearly died. But there's a nice, you know, it is a nice little kind of badass action movie moment. And I said to you, like, as soon as they said, who do you work for? I was like, he's going to say Jesus. And he does. He goes, the Son of Man.
I think he actually says God Almighty.
Well, they ask him twice, and that's what he says the second time.
Okay.
And then they put one in his computer.
They do. They put one right in his computer. And you would think the Tribulation Force would be very upset about this. But instead, they just head straight back to Chicago, and we see Buck and Chloe get married.
Well, there's actually a scene between, because when the GC soldier shoots Chris, the gunshot cuts, and it's we see the president and vice president skeet shooting in very, very snowy Washington, D.C., which I'm going to go ahead and assume was Vancouver. Standing in for Washington, D.C.
It is a Canadian city, yes. I don't know if it's Vancouver. I think it may be Toronto. But, yes, there is that scene transition of the gunshot leading into another gunshot, which I observed. Oh, yeah, that was a pretty nice scene transition. But, yes, there's a scene where the president and the vice president are talking to each other. They're having this conversation. And I am totally not sure what they are saying at this point. I don't know if they're saying that they are not loyal to Nikolai or what.
Yeah, it's a weird scene of exposition where what they are explaining, we were trying to figure it out after the scene, and I almost went back and watched it, and then Matt and I were just both like, yeah, we're not. this train goes one way. If we can't keep up, that's on us. Because there's a line in there about how, like, the vice president's talking about how every country in the world has voted to completely disarm. But then he says something like, you know, Nikolai stepped up and America stepped down. And I think he's talking about in terms of global power.
I think he means that America is one of the holdout countries that doesn't want to join the global community. It seems to be the United States, the UK, and Egypt who are like, I don't know. I don't know about you, Nikolai. I don't know if we want to join your one world government yet. Even though in the last movie, it seemed like America was totally on board.
Well, yeah, and that Nikolai is living in America.
Yeah. In New York, I think. There was no indication that the U.S. government still existed at all in the last two movies. And now suddenly there's this U.S. government with a president who lives in the White House. But he seems to be the entirety of the U.S. government. There's no Congress anymore.
We have skipped over... if any of this is explained in the books, they are skipping over it in the movies.
Yeah.
Because, like, we get new characters, we get new major characters in this movie that we have never seen before.
Here's what Wikipedia says about what they talk about.
Okay, please, please tell me.
Mallory informs Fitzhugh of Nikolai's plans and how he has found evidence that Nikolai is planning an attack on American soil.
Right, that's Mallory as the vice president.
That's right. He's saying that Nikolai has formulas. And Lou Gossett Jr. goes, what kind of formulas? And the vice president says, biological formulas. So there's going to be some kind of bioweapon attack on the United States. And the only explanation I can think of for this is that the United States has been a holdout to joining the global community. So Nikolai is going to attack the United States to bring down the U.S. government and make it part of the global community.
Yeah, and Mallory is a member of something that is referred to as the militia, which is, as we all know, militias are very positive things.
Oh, yeah.
This is the underground organization of true patriots fighting against Nikolai Carpathia. Ooh, the politics of this movie.
So, as they're riding away from their skeet shooting expedition.
Oh, it's so amazing. Yeah.
As the motorcade is driving away, cars start exploding. Everybody's car but the president.
There's an amazing line where Louis Gossett Jr., Fitzhugh, and Mallory are having this very hushed conversation. And Louis Gossett Jr. goes, what makes you think that Nikolai's planning to attack America? And the car behind them immediately explodes.
Yes. The actual practical effects in this part are pretty good. Like, yeah. These are real cars really exploding.
Like, if you've seen Mad Max Fury Road, it's basically the exact same.
Yeah, it's so close. The president's driver stops and gets out of the car and just leaves. There's snowmobiles encroaching on them. There are also dirt bikes encroaching.
There are dudes in dirt bikes with Uzis. And this is where I was like, Matt, I'm loving this. I'm loving this movie.
Now, it seems as though the snowmobile people are Nikolai Carpathia's people. And the dirt bike people are the militia. And the dirt bike people manage to fend off Nikolai Carpathia's soldiers. In the process, the vice president gets shot and killed.
Right.
But the president, Lou Gossett Jr., jumps away from an explosion.
As you do.
And is completely fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Now back to that scene that I was talking about where nobody cares about how Chris died. And the entire Tribulation Force just goes back to the church in Chicago and gets married. Chloe and Buck get married. And Ray gets married to a woman we have never seen before, whose name is Amanda White.
There are pieces of this movie that I'm sure you could show me, and it would be like the first time I was seeing them. And I would have been playing a lot of Marvel Puzzle Quest during this movie if my phone had not died immediately after we started watching it. But I would like to think that I would recognize a major character. I mean, Matt and I have spent 10 hours of our lives with these movies at this point, watching and talking about them. I would like to think that we would remember a major character. So, we have never seen this person before.
Wikipedia says she is the newest member who once knew Rayford's first wife before the vanishings. That is never stated in this movie.
Yeah.
That must be something from the books.
Yes.
Because it is never, never once stated in this movie.
Yeah. Her name is Amanda, or Mandy.
And she is like white bread dipped into skim milk. She's super boring.
She is exactly like, remember in the first movie? It was the first movie where we talked about how Ray's wife and potential mistress both look the exact same, right?
Yeah. I think it's more of a thing in the remake. In the Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, that's right.
One.
That was in the remake. That was in the remake. But like, yeah, she is the triplet of Hattie and of wife who went to heaven, whose name I can't remember.
It's true. The she is such a non-entity. She is in this movie to do two things, and we will get to them eventually. But man, yeah she might as her name being Amanda White, super accurate.
Should be Amanda Beige, to be honest with you. And this scene takes forever.
Well, we hear everyone's vows.
We hear everyone's vows and the entirety of 1 Corinthians 14.
Yeah, and yes, we also hear Bruce, who is now played by this new actor, who is not bad, but he's not Clarence Gilliard.
No, I mean, but honestly, he is way better than I was expecting the replacement for Clarence Gilliard in the third movie to be. Like, yeah. At this point, if you told me, like, oh, hey, here's the third Left Behind movie, not everybody's coming back, I would have assumed that the replacement actors were terrible. He's actually, like, he handles himself pretty good. He's, you know, he gets some pretty decent emotion out of it. But yeah, this wedding is interminable.
And we see every ring put on every finger. And it's just like, you could just do like a quick montage of like, hey, they're getting married, and accomplish exactly the same thing.
I mean, Matt, I am going to be 100% serious. I was at your wedding.
Yes, you were.
This wedding in Left Behind World at War was literally longer than your actual wedding.
Than the wedding ceremony, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, no also, kidding. Did we mention that this wedding is taking place in the basement of a bombed-out church?
Oh, yeah. They can't, there's no electricity in there. They have to use candles.
Yeah.
And in the next scene, the entire Tribulation Force is sitting around a table, by candlelight, talking about what they're going to do now. So here's what we get. Buck is going to L.A. Rayford is flying Nikolai to New Babylon.
Which is Old Babylon.
Which is Iraq. It's not what you might think New Babylon could be. Nope, it's just Iraq. And I don't remember why Buck was going to L.A., because pretty soon he decides he's got to go to Washington, D.C. instead.
Yeah, who knows? Pastor Bruce is like, yeah, I guess I gotta go tell Chris's family. Which is weird, because if you were paying attention to when Chris got saved, it was amazing. He was really upset because he had lost his family in the rapture. But I mean, that was 18 months ago. So
and you would,
who knows?
You would think it would be Ray who would be like, I have to go tell Chris's family.
Ray, his friend who helped him come to Christ.
I don't know. I don't. Look, clearly Chris is a character who does not matter.
Nope.
The makers of this movie do not care about him.
Do not care.
The next scene involves Nikolai to meet with President Fitzhugh and tell him that he is really upset with the vice president being killed, and he has his greatest sympathies.
Mm-hmm.
And then he introduces President Fitzhugh to a woman named Carolyn Miller, who poses as Nikolai's top aide at the global community headquarters. However, Carolyn is a mole who is actually working for the militia.
Yeah, and we should say at this point, Gordon Curry is Nikolai Carpathia. He has toned the accent down quite a bit.
Okay, so if the accent in the first movie was a 5, and the accent in the second movie was a 10...
More like a 17, but go on.
I'm not talking about in terms of quality. I'm talking about in terms of, like, level of accent.
Oh, yeah, I know. Maybe our version of his accent is a 17. We do take it a little bit far.
This one, it's like a 2. Like, he drops the accent entirely in places. It's way more subtle, and in places, it's like he's just not doing it at all. He just sounds like a Canadian guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's very disappointing, to be honest. Like, it is probably better, like, you know, someone probably took him aside and said, hey, like, maybe don't go quite as big as you did in the last movie. But we were so looking forward to it.
We were. We really were. And it was so much more subdued this time.
Yeah, like maybe we could, maybe you and I, Matt, maybe that should be our next Patreon goal. Maybe if our goal goes high enough, we just do ADR for Le Fine World of War, where we do the voices of Nikolai Carpathia and the British Prime Minister.
We'll get to the British Prime Minister in a minute. So what's going on now? There are people getting sick. And in particular, a lot of Christians are getting sick.
Yeah, all members of the underground churches. Because I guess this is really glossed over, which is weird because you would think it would be really important, especially given how the last movie ends. But Christianity has been outlawed, right? Like the Bibles are being rounded up in Bible warehouses or whatever. It's like all the churches have been destroyed. They're literally underground.
It was hinted at in the last movie, or it was explicitly stated in the last movie, that Nikolai Carpathia is going to outlaw Christianity and kill anyone who is a Christian.
Right.
So that has, like, that movie, has come to pass.
But the time jump means that we don't actually get that explained. And maybe it would, like, maybe we don't need it, but this movie is like, yeah, you know, Christianity's outlawed. Like, it's going to happen. Like, we all know that this is inevitable. Christianity's going to be outlawed. They're going to destroy churches. Nikolai has instated his weird one-world religion, I guess. But even that's weird, because when he talks to Louis Gossett Jr., he says, "Oh, thank the gods." And it's like, wait a second, Nikolai, weren't you trying to have yourself declared the Messiah? Like,
and weren't you trying to, like, implement a religion where there's basically no god? Because you're making it sound like you've just brought back the Greek pantheon.
Yeah, it's a weird, or like, or, it's just weird. Like, oh, hey, what is sacrilege? All right, here's all of it.
or maybe he's just a big Battlestar Galactica fan.
Maybe he's been watching a little too much Renaissance Pictures Productions.
So there's this whole thing where Chloe, like, Kirk Cameron's got to go, Buck's got to go to L.A. for reasons that aren't totally explained. Chloe says she's going to stay behind and help these sick people.
Right, because if you remember in the last movie, she had kind of found her calling, I guess, as a nurse, doctor kind of thing.
Whatever the case, she helped a burned guy in the last movie. So yeah. She's going to stay around and help sick people this time. And what that means is hanging out in a room with extremely sick people who have something that is akin to anthrax with no mask on. She's not even wearing rubber gloves. Like, none of these people are quarantined. It's just like, let's put healthy people in here with the sick people and hope things go okay. There's a scene where, and I think by this point in the movie, Bruce has gotten sick.
Right.
He's having dreams about Nikolai coming to talk to him and, like, acting like he's a nurse, but also telling him that God's not real.
That dream sequence was great. That dream sequence was awesome. Well,
the thing is, I identified him as Nikolai immediately.
Yeah. Even though he's in shadow and wearing a mask, you're like, is that Nikolai?
Yeah. And he's talking in not his Nikolai accent. He's talking in just, like, a regular Canadian accent. And I'm like, that's definitely Nikolai. And he takes off the mask, and then he's Nikolai.
There are a lot of actually really good lines in this part. Like, they're, like, so over-the-top dramatic, but I really do kind of like them. Because, you know, Bruce calls Buck and is telling him, like, yeah, you know, people are getting sick, and it's only people who are at the underground churches. Like, that, it's here in Chicago, it's at our sister churches. They kind of figure out, or the theory that they have is that Nikolai is sending infected people into the churches, and there's, like, an actual, I think, pretty good line from Bruce where he's like, yeah, but we can't turn them away, like, we can't turn anyone away because that's not right. So, you know, this is gonna kill us, but we can't do anything else. It's the perfect plan to get us. I actually really did like that idea. I think that's pretty solid.
Bruce is sick, and Chloe decides that her way of treating him is to just bury her face in his chest. A guaranteed way to get fucking sick.
A person with what appears to be a respiratory disease, by the way. Yeah. Just going straight for the chest.
It's so stupid. Everybody in this church is so stupid.
You're getting so upset, Matt.
We find out what is causing the illness. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a scene when Lou Gossett Jr. goes to visit Nikolai in his office at the top of this huge tower in, I assume, New York, where Nikolai is kind of like talking about how we're going to bring America together and we're going to get rid of the bad elements. And here's how we're going to do it. And he opens a briefcase and he pulls out this vial of clear liquid. And then he turns it over and this like these bubbles start coming up and it turns green. But he doesn't really explain what this liquid is. He just shows it to Lou Gossett Jr. and that's about it.
And it looks like the ooze. Yeah, it looks like he's about to reveal that Louis Gossett Jr. came from the TGRI laboratory and get David Warner to build him Taka and Rezar.
Also, Lou Gossett Jr. just kind of totally no-sells the whole thing. Like, he's just not impressed by this vial. But he goes to Carolyn Miller's underground militia headquarters, and they develop this plan to find out what's going on. They talk to the British Prime Minister and the President of Egypt, who were talking to them via satellite on these two TVs. And the way that you know the British Prime Minister is in Britain is because he has some tchotchkes on his desk and a painting behind him, and there's wallpaper. The way that you know the Egyptian president is in Egypt is because there is a house plant and a rug on the wall.
Yeah, a Persian rug.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get it. You get it.
One is the UK and one is Egypt.
Oh, boy.
And the UK Prime Minister says, well, you know, we've verified that there's going to be an attack on US soil, old boy, you know, because what we've seen is via the global satellite.
We got the information from the global satellite.
We've plugged into the global satellite, and what we've found out...
It's only a matter of days, old boy.
There's going to be a huge attack, and you've got to infiltrate their compound, you know.
And Matt and I kind of missed the next 15 minutes of the movie because we were just doing that accent at each other.
Yep. But we did see the scene where Lou Gossett Jr. goes to this giant compound, this giant global community compound, and he and Carolyn discover that it's not people that are being infected with the virus. It's Bibles. Specifically, Gideon Bibles.
Amazing.
So, it's not even really people in churches who are going to be infected by this. It's people in hotels.
Oh,
right?
Matt, can we talk about this, though? Because Louis Gossett Jr. and Miller sneak into this warehouse, and they look down, and there's like a big floor. And it looks like they're just setting up a buffet. Like a very big buffet. Like they've got these tables with things very neatly laid out and what look like sneeze guards.
Yeah.
And then the sneeze guards close and they literally spray glowing green mist onto the Bibles.
And underneath, underneath that is that clear liquid with the green stuff bubbling up from it.
Right. So all the Bibles that were stolen and shipped off to Utah or wherever that the Tribulation Force has been doing these raids to get the word out, that was all according to Nikolai's plan.
That's right.
To get Christians infected with his deadly disease. Which, pretty big flaw in this plan. But we'll get to that.
Okay, so President Fitzhugh and Carolyn get caught seeing this. And guards try to stop them. They escape. And the president, who I observed through this whole scene... Why is the president the person doing this himself? Shouldn't he have somebody to do this for him? The president himself shoots a guard as he's escaping. Now, we skipped over the scene where Kirk Cameron and President Fitzhugh meet.
Mm-hmm.
Because President Fitzhugh is very suspicious of Nikolai. He wants to find somebody who can help him take down Nikolai. So the Secret Service grabs Buck Williams. They put a bag over his head. They take him to this weird warehouse where the president is. They sit him across from the president. The president starts asking him questions. The president starts saying stuff like, who do you think is the supreme power on Earth? And Buck Williams is trying to play along. He's like, well, of course, Nikolai Carpathia. And the president's like, so you're saying it's not Jesus? Will you denounce Jesus right here and now? And Kirk Cameron goes, no, I won't do that. They take the bag off his head, and he goes, Mr. President! As if he could not identify the President of the United States by voice.
Now, two things about this. One, it's Louis Gossett Jr. Very distinctive voice. Like, kind of his trademark. Two, Buck Williams is a reporter. Buck Williams is specifically an international political reporter. Like, if anyone should be able to identify, like, look, I will admit I don't watch the news as much as I should. I don't watch speeches as much as I should. I feel like if I was blindfolded and I was having a conversation with President Obama, I'd be able to be like, I'm sorry, are you President Obama?
Instead, Buck Williams does not recognize him until his bag is taken off his head and he sees him. By the way, Buck Williams doesn't do his job at all in this movie.
No, there's no reporting going on.
He does it a lot in the previous two. He does it none here.
He says in this scene that he works for Nikolai Carpathia, right? Because he's still
technically the media liaison. Technically, GNN is under Nikolai Carpathia's control. So,
well, he takes that job in Tribulation Force, though. He takes the specific job that is offered to him on the rooftop. You know, the people need to trust their media back. But then, also, he's the dude clearly filming the two witnesses at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. Like, that's clearly Buck Williams. Like, he speaks on camera. Like, Nikolai should have had him killed immediately.
Yeah, how is he still alive?
Yeah.
The president, their conversation is basically just like, hey, people are getting sick. Well, look here in the Bible. It says there's going to be pestilence.
Oh my God, worst line in the movie.
Webster's Dictionary defines pestilence as...
I shit you not.
That is something Kirk Cameron actually says.
He literally says Webster's Dictionary defines pestilence as.
He gives the dictionary definition of pestilence. And he says, you know, it also says in here that there are going to be earthquakes and other disasters, but pestilence comes first. And the president basically goes, well, okay, that's good to know. If I need you, I'll call you. And hey, also, good luck with those earthquakes. Which is a pretty sweet Lou Gossett line.
He gives Buck Williams his personal cell phone number. And that's hilarious. Like, especially because he gets a call later in the movie from the President of the United States and doesn't recognize the number. Like, when he answers the phone, he goes, Chloe?
Yeah. On a cell phone that should tell you who's calling you.
You should at least, you know, you at least put the president in your phone if he gives you his number. Like, yeah. New phone. Who's this?
Skip ahead. Now the president has seen this thing with the Bibles, and the militia, he and the British Prime Minister and the President of Egypt and this militia have all conspired to do this plan where he's going to take a porcelain gun.
It's a porcelain gun. It's a pistol made of porcelain.
He's going to go up to Nikolai Carpathia's office and assassinate him on the spot.
And he also has, as his backup plan, there's a transponder that he has that will, like, wherever he is, it will launch an airstrike from space.
From a satellite.
From a satellite. Like you know, G.I. Joe Retaliation, the documentary about the American defense industry. I just want to talk about this porcelain pistol, because he pulls this thing out, and it is literally the color of a toilet.
Yeah.
They have gone and bought an air pistol from Walmart that is shaped like a Glock 17, and just spray-painted it to look like it is made, like... what you would think when you hear porcelain. Like, oh, right, like in the bathroom.
President Fitzhugh goes to GC headquarters, which is in, it's in this crazy building that does not look like UN headquarters at all. It looks like nothing.
It looks like it's from a video game. It looks like the bad guy's skyscraper in a video game.
It looks like the head of the Mad Gear gang lives in this building.
You know, Horace Belcher. Didn't think I was going to bust out the name of the head of the Mad Gear gang, did you? You forgot who you were messing with.
So President Fitzhugh goes to the building, he gets through the detectors, and he gets on an elevator by himself without the Secret Service.
Yeah, they won't let the Secret Service guys go with him.
This Secret Service agent starts, like, freaking out. And he's like, I should have gone with him. I should have helped him. And this other Secret Service agent just shoots him in the back. And he falls to the ground. Well, and there's
he shoots him in the back, and the guy, like, looks down and touches the wound and, like, just keeps standing there. And they shoot him again.
Yeah, totally unnecessary to do two shots. So Fitzhugh is on his own. He goes up to Carpathia's office. And Carpathia's like, I knew you were coming. And I know that you're here to kill me. But there's nothing you can do. You think I didn't know about your transponder? And he pulls out this like device and just smashes it in his hand.
Did he pickpocket it off him?
Yeah, and he goes, go ahead, try to shoot me. See where it gets you. I've already done everything I want to do. And yeah. Lou Gossett Jr. pulls out his porcelain gun and kind of like takes it and points it at Nikolai. And just at that moment, the other Secret Service guy gets there. Lou Gossett Jr. pops off some shots.
Before that, Nikolai like gestures and all the TVs come on and they show that
He has to show him the news first.
Before the Egyptian and British governments can launch their attacks, because we're going to launch an attack on Heathrow. It's the center of his air power. Which, why would you use a civilian commercial airport as the headquarters of your military air power? But whatever, you know, fine. It's a big airport, I guess, is why. He reveals that all of the attacks are happening now. Like, all of the attacks that they were trying to prevent have already started from even before Louis Gossett Jr. got up to the office. So you start seeing explosions even outside the window.
Yeah, the three cities that were going to be attacked, New York, Chicago, and Washington, D.C., are already all under attack. They are being smushed with missiles.
It's good. It's a weird way to put that.
Accurate, though?
Not the word I would have chosen, but yes. Okay, smushed with missiles.
Lou Gossett Jr. is fazed by this, but he still pulls out that gun. That Secret Service agent is there. He pops off two shots from the porcelain gun. Actually, more than two. Like, he shoots a whole clip at Nikolai.
He empties it.
The bullets go straight through Nikolai.
But not, like, straight through Nikolai in the way you expect from hearing us say that. Like, they don't just pass through him like he's Kitty Pryde. They, like, they shoot through him. But, like, and there's a shot from the side, and it literally looks like he's shooting a couch or a pillow. Yeah, like, there's like stuffing coming out.
Stuffing comes out like he shot a stuffed bear.
Yeah.
It's very strange, but they go through Nikolai and they hit the Secret Service agent. The Secret Service agent hits the ground. He dies. And then Nikolai fucking Darth Vader's the president and like takes control of his hands, puts his gun to his head and tells him, do you think the gun is empty? And Lou Gossett Jr. is like, yeah, I emptied the clip. So Lou Gossett Jr., he makes Lou Gossett Jr. throw the gun away, and then he makes him start choking himself.
An actor of the caliber of Louis Gossett Jr. should not be called upon to do something that stupid. There is no way to not look super dumb while doing that.
Then President Fitzhugh starts floating off the ground, like a foot off the ground. And then he gets fucking Mace Windu'd. He gets thrown out the window. Wikipedia says it's a 20th story window. But we see a shot from Nikolai's point of view where he looks like he's on the third floor. President Fitzhugh goes through the window. There's some terrible CGI of glass. But still, Lou Gossett is going through a goddamn window, and he falls onto the top of a car, and it looks like he should absolutely be dead.
It's actually not unlike the opening scene of Furious 7.
Lou Gossett just like gets up, brushes himself off, and walks away. And there's this great Nikolai Carpathia line where he goes, "That is not humanly possible."
And then he like rolls his eyes and looks up at the sky. Like he is so like, "I can't believe you're doing this." Like, it's such a great look. I love Gordon Curry as Nikolai Carpathia. He's great. He's the best part of these movies.
President Fitzhugh returns to the militia base.
And everybody's freaking out because they think he's the only one who is not, like, actually there getting bombed that knew the plan. So they're like, oh yeah, he sold us out. He was a pawn of Nikolai all along.
The Egyptian president particularly believes this and tells the president, if I wasn't as far away from you right now as I am, if I was in that room, I would shoot you right now. The Prime Minister of England's like, "Who? Well, dear boy, I don't know what to think.
I say we've been belly betrayed.
There's a bloody mole in our midst.
It's a bit of a sticky wicket."
Even Carolyn is like, I thought I could trust you, but you sold us out."
Yeah.
And
there's this great scene where Louis Gossett Jr. just kind of sits down and she's like, "You expect me to believe that you fought Nikolai Carpathia, you shot him point blank, somehow missed, and then he threw you out a 20-story window and you survived and came back here? That's what you want me to believe?" And Louis Gossett Jr. just kind of sits down and slumps and goes, "But it's the truth."
Yeah.
Like, it's like so hopeless for him. He's really great.
Yeah. He plays that so well. Like
he goes for it too.
He's like, "I got thrown out of a window." Like, "You don't believe me? I got thrown out of a window."
Yeah.
Meanwhile, at Tribulation Force HQ.
Oh god, I forgot about all of this.
Bruce is sick. Guess what? Chloe? She got sick too. She buried her face in a sick person's chest and got hella sick. Who would have thought?
Yeah, you mean in that room where everyone is completely surrounded by sick people and it doesn't even look like anybody's washing their hands?
She calls Buck, who I think is in D.C. at this point. And there is just a flat-out terrible scene where she's telling Buck that Bruce isn't going to make it. It's a matter of minutes. And says without saying that she's also sick. And Buck starts freaking out and saying how he should have been there. And he really wants to help her, help them. And she goes, "Oh, Buck." And the phone drops out of her hand. And she kind of just like slumps against the wall. And it is terrible.
"I love you."
Yeah, that's what she says.
It's really bad.
Now, we haven't talked about the Ray plot that's going on at all. Or what Amanda is doing.
Well, Amanda's not doing anything.
Well, okay, so there's a flight that Ray takes Nikolai on to New Babylon. But we don't see a lot of Nikolai on that flight. What we mostly see is Hattie and the interactions between Hattie and Amanda.
Ooh, and they are, oof, they are rough.
They are bad because Amanda knows all about Ray's past with Hattie. Hattie doesn't like Amanda. We get the strong impression that she's still into Ray, or she's trying to corrupt Ray.
Oh, she's totally still into Ray. Like, she says she's still into Ray.
But I don't know if that's like a ploy or what. But either way, she says, "Look, Ray, I know your new wife has a Bible. And you know what could happen if I took that Bible and I showed it to Nikolai. You would be put in the gulags. But I'm not going to do that because I'm still into you. I still love you. So dump your wife and come get with me. Dump your goody two-shoes wife," which is what she
literally calls her goody two-shoes,
actually says, "and come get with me." And Ray's like, "No, I'm not doing that. We should have never had whatever we had." which was not actually an affair. That leads Hattie to say, well, then the consequences are yours to deal with. So they go to New Babylon, they come back, and Hattie says, you know what? I'm not turning you in. But just know that I could have.
And before all this, there's a conversation between Hattie and Mandy that Ray walks in on, where Mandy says, if not for the Webster's Dictionary line, it would probably be the worst line in the movie, where she just goes, it's okay, Hattie. Women don't heal as fast as men.
It's awful.
No, Hattie. It's totally okay for men to get married 18 months after their wives and children vanish. But, you know, women, we tend to hold on to things a little longer. It's just the way we are.
Here's the other really horrible thing Amanda is there to do. So when they get back from New Babylon, Hattie tells Ray that, you know, she's not going to turn him in, but that Ray's basically fired as right. The pilot. That is when Amanda decides to chime in and ask Hattie how far along she is.
Because no, I completely missed that. Are you serious?
Yes, because she just knows.
I don't know what I was doing. I somehow completely missed that.
She just knows that Hattie's pregnant. She doesn't have to. There's no sign that Hattie's pregnant. Anything. But Amanda just knows it because she's a woman.
Oh my God, I can't believe I completely missed that.
And Hattie immediately fesses up and says, 3 months. I'm 3 months along. But you can't tell Nikolai. Nikolai's got a ton of other lovers. And I can't say anything about it. And here's my place anyway. I need to be here working. It's rough. And it is the entirety of that plot.
Oh my God.
Ray gets fired and Amanda figures out, just by looking at her, that Hattie is pregnant.
Baby sense. And then she gives her a Bible.
And then she gives her a white Bible, wrapped loosely in cloth. So at that point, Ray and Amanda go back to Chicago, and they go back to the church. And they go down to the infirmary area with no masks and no gloves, even though we did notice that Amanda kept on her leather gloves. At yes. least she did that. They go downstairs. They see that Chloe is sick now, in addition to Bruce being sick. And they decide that what they're going to do at this point is they're going to have communion, which involves everybody drinking wine out of the same cup. How stupid are these people? Clearly, Ray and Amanda are going to get sick from that. But they drink right after Chloe does.
Well, Bruce dies.
Yeah, Bruce dies, and that's when they decide that they're going to have communion.
Yeah.
Because that's what Bruce would want.
So yeah, he says, hey, I want to have one last communion. And as soon as he eats that bread, he is gone. I don't even think he gets the bread. Because if he did, well. So they all drink the wine from the same glass. And then immediately Chloe's like, oh, hey, I feel better. I'm cured. It's the wine.
I can breathe. It's the wine. It's the wine. And we think at this point that that is an indication that Jesus' blood, actual transfigured Jesus blood, even though these people are not Catholic and they don't believe that, healed Chloe. But as it turns out, it's just wine. It's
she
just
calls
red
Buck
wine.
And says, we found the cure. It's red wine.
Yeah. And I guess the thought is that these evangelicals never drink. So who cares if this stuff is cured by red wine?
And I love that. I love that because that means Ray needs to turn around and just be like, hey, everybody, we're getting fucked up tonight.
But it's also they definitely do communion. So unless they're drinking grape juice like people in my old Baptist church used to do and not drinking actual wine, then obviously they're going to drink the cure to this illness. This was a terrible plan.
Yeah, it would be easier to get my head around if it had literally been a transubstantiation thing. If Jesus had blessed the wine, if there wasn't that line in there where she goes, we found the cure, it's red wine.
Yeah.
If it had been a miracle and not just some weird, I guess, symbolic thing.
I do not know. But Buck is in the midst of going to visit President Fitzhugh during all of this.
Mm-hmm.
He actually goes to see President Fitzhugh before he even knew about the cure, because there's an exchange between him and the president where he tells the president, my wife, who I just married, and the pastor who brought the Tribulation Force together, they are in a church in Chicago right now dying. And the president goes, well, why aren't you with them? And this is after we've moved ahead to after the moment where President Fitzhugh was recording the video that we saw at the beginning of the movie. And that shadowy figure who was standing in front of the fire was Buck Williams.
And here's where it's coming together, everybody.
Yeah.
Here's where it's coming together.
So Buck Williams' answer to the question of why aren't you with your loved ones who are dying is that, well, they know Jesus. And Mr. President, you don't. So I'm here to help you. And then Lou Gossett, despite Kirk Cameron playing that scene so badly, Lou Gossett knocks that shit out.
It is unreal how good he is in that scene. Especially for acting opposite Kirk Cameron, who, if it has not come through over the past 4 episodes of the show, I don't think we think he's a great actor. This is maybe, you know, maybe not his best work, if we're being honest with each other. For him to be acting opposite Louis Gossett Jr. Nails it. It's unbelievably good. It is the most believable, like, religious conversion in a series of movies that are all about religious conversions.
Well, Lou Gossett is, like, putting his hand to his face. He's, like, clearly going through a lot of emotional stuff right here. He's thinking about, like, his whole life and what he's done. There are tears. Like, you can see all this emotion on his face. And, like, he starts praying, and you're like, I believe it. I believe what he's going through right now.
And he's, like, so... Again, I don't know if subtle is the word, but that he's, like, he's quiet, and he's very clearly, like, a man who is out of options. Like, this is all he has left. Like, he has tried everything he can. The only thing he hasn't tried is Christianity. And so there's, like, the scene where he's just like, just tell me what I need to do.
Yeah, but then it cuts over to Kirk Cameron, who starts praying, and Kirk Cameron might as well be a block of balsa wood. Like, he's so wooden and dry after this amazing... Like, you would think Lou Gossett would elevate him a little. He does not.
Yeah, and again, like, the one thing we know about Kirk Cameron is that he's legit a believer in all this. Like, if there's one thing he should be able to pull off, it's praying. And he is blown out of the water by Louis Gossett Jr.
So they leave the White House. They casually walk through a fire out of the White House. And Lou Gossett Jr. says, I have to go face down Nikolai again. I need you to do me one favor. Go to the militia headquarters and tell them to set up the transponder to my cell phone. And I'm going to go to GC headquarters. So the president goes storming into global community headquarters and is invisible. Nobody sees him.
Yeah,
he walks onto the elevator. Invisible. He walks onto the elevator. It opens. He gets on. It closes. And there's a shot of just an empty elevator as the doors close.
Yeah, and the other guy's looking at him.
He is totally invisible. He goes up to Nikolai's office. Nikolai is there. And Nikolai's like, what do you think you can do?
Oh, you came back.
Yeah, you think you can do anything to me? You've already tried. Nothing can kill me. Nothing can stop me. Lou Gossett Jr. just pulls out his phone. He hits that transponder button.
Well, he turns the phone on behind his back and calls Miller. So she can hear Nikolai basically be like, oh, yes, I tried to kill you. I threw you out the window. Like,
oh, right.
Basically admit that he was not part of the plan.
He exonerates himself, yes.
Yes.
and then shoots a goddamn missile through the window of Nikolai Carpathia's office and blows up the entire global community headquarters.
Oh, it's great, because he's like, I see everything that goes on this world. And Louis Gossett Jr. goes, God, I'd let you see everything. Look behind you. Yeah. And he turns around. There's a fucking missile flying at the building. It's actually great.
There's also an exchange where Lou Gossett Jr. is like, you know what? I joined up with your actual enemies. That's right. I'm with Jesus now. And Nikolai Carpathia's reaction to that is just to go like, oh, him. I'm so sick of that guy.
Love these two, man. Love these two.
Yeah, what if it had just been them in a movie together, and we didn't have to deal with all these terrible characters we've had for the past two movies?
Like, that's the weird thing about it, is that Louis Gossett Jr., you know, as the president of America, trying to deal with this attack that he knows is coming from the Antichrist. It is problematic, yes. It is deeply, deeply flawed. But it is far and away the most coherent and most entertaining plot of the things that we have seen in any of these movies. And with our two favorite actors who have been in these movies, excepting Clarence Gilliard. Yeah. Like, two of our three favorite, I guess.
Now, I should note that at this point, this is easily the worst special effect in the film.
Oh, it's really bad.
The global community headquarters blowing up. It's like, you know those computer-animated cartoons you see on the Christian channel that are scary because they're so bad?
Right.
Like, the animation is so cheap and so crappy that the characters are scary-looking.
Mm-hmm.
That's what these special effects look like.
Yeah,
they are
really
that
awful.
Terrible. For all we know, Nikolai Carpathia, like, the president has committed suicide, but Nikolai Carpathia is gone.
Which is weird. Like, we had a little debate about that. It's like, hey, aren't you not supposed to commit suicide?
It's a martyrdom, right?
I guess. I mean, it's a suicide bombing is what, like, it's a literal suicide bombing is what it is, but.
Buck is on his way back home. He calls Chloe and tells her, I'm coming home. As soon as he can get home. He gets to the bottom of the elevator. There's Carolyn. And there's a little conversation between them, maybe setting up another movie where they say that they need to talk. Then there's like police all gather around the global community building. There's fire, there's smoke. And then we just see Nikolai Carpathia, unscathed, walk through the smoke and fire out of the wreckage.
The so awful smoke and fire. Like, it's the worst special effect in the movie.
Well, the building blowing up plus him walking through the smoke, both really bad.
Well, I mean, like, him walking through the smoke is like PlayStation 1 level polygons. Like, it's unbelievably awful.
It's bad. And that's the movie. All right, I think I know what our high point of this movie is.
Chappie. Man, back in action.
He's so much better than this movie calls for.
He goes for it. Like, he commits to everything in a way that I don't think anybody else really does in the movie. Like, I don't think they're not committing. He is all in every time the camera is pointed at him.
Lou Gossett Jr. acts circles around everybody in this movie and everybody in the Nick Cage Left Behind.
Yeah, I would say that is fair.
He is so much better than anybody in any of those movies. And it makes me wish that the entire series had been about him.
Well, it also helps that he has a coherent plot.
Relatively.
something that the other... Like, certainly in the last movie, was just not present for anyone. His conversion scene is unbelievably great.
Yeah.
Like,
compare that to the Chris conversion scene from the last movie.
Yeah.
Which was insulting.
Yeah, and aggressive. Like, it's still, like, there's still that level of aggressiveness, because it's like, you know, you're gonna go to hell if you don't convert right now. You know, Jesus died on the cross. Again, you kind of have to take it in the idea that, like, yes, all this is literally factual in the world of this movie. And Gossett plays it like that. Like, yep. Like, yep, it's all on the table now.
He's so good. And
he's really great.
Beyond him, I would say the high points are some of the practical stunts, which makes sense because the director of this is a stunt coordinator. Mm-hmm. So that scene where the motorcade gets attacked and their car's blowing up, really good.
Yeah, it was like the opening of a James Bond movie. It was not like the opening of a James Bond movie from 2005, you understand. But it looked good. You know, there were dudes jumping on dirt bikes and firing guns. Like, there was decent stuff in there.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Also, like I said it a few minutes ago, I honestly think the plot of this movie is more engaging and more coherent and more just all around enjoyable to watch than Tribulation Force, which had a plot in the last 15 minutes, and Left Behind, which kind of, you know, like the rapture happened. That's the plot of the movie, but like, it's all caught up in this weird, you know, a land deal and food supply stuff. Like, all that stuff is boring and terrible. This movie is about, like, shooting the ooze from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles onto Bibles and, you know, the Antichrist trying to blow up America. Like, yeah. It's a full-on supervillain Cobra Commander plot. But, you know, I kind of like that stuff, so.
Yeah. Another high point, I think, is just that this movie is better shot and better lit than any of the previous movies.
Shot and directed 10 times better than Tribulation Force.
Okay, low points. And I was talking about how the lighting and the shots don't exactly do any favors for the actors.
Yeah, those close-ups?
I'm going to say that's a makeup problem. Makeup in this movie is really bad.
There's something going on there. Like, because
characters that aren't supposed to look sick look kind of haggard. And the characters that look sick look dead.
The scene with Hattie and Ray is, it's just close-ups of Hattie and Ray, like, dirty overs from each side as they're, like, crammed into what appears to actually be an airplane. Like, the airplane that Nikolai is flying around in Tribulation Force is clearly a soundstage. Like, it's a massive. This looks like it's an actual airplane. Like, they're very cramped in together, which, it's a very claustrophobic scene for, I think you're supposed to sympathize with Ray kind of being cornered up against the wall by this Jezebel. But yeah, she is painted really unflatteringly, and he is just kind of sallow. Like, it's not great.
Nobody looks good. Like, Kirk Cameron is rocking a little, like, rebellious stubble, but it does not help him. Like, no, he does not look good. Nobody looks good.
Again, the clothes are terrible.
Most shockingly of all, Lou Gossett has the worst clothes of anybody.
He is, like, the suits are so boxy on him. It is, like Matt and I are not, like, fashionistas. We are noticing that these clothes are ill-fitting and unflattering and bad.
I feel like everybody else's clothes, except for the pastor, Bruce has bad clothes in this. But, like, Kirk Cameron's clothes are a little better.
A little better, but he's not wearing a jacket for a lot of the movie, and that helps because that jacket was what was making him look like a kid.
Lou Gossett's clothes, shockingly bad.
Yeah.
Shockingly bad.
If a man is playing the president, get him a tailored suit.
Another low point, and we touched on this, the gender politics are so terrible.
I mean, specifically with regards to Hattie
the stuff
and Mandy.
With Hattie and Amanda, so bad. The thing where she just can tell that she's pregnant, mind-blowingly terrible.
The whole thing about, like, it's okay, Hattie. Women just, you know, men just heal faster.
I'm going to say everything that doesn't involve Louis Gossett Jr., plot-wise, really bad. The stuff with the wine being the cure, the stuff with everything involving Kirk Cameron, like, he's such a non-entity for most of this movie, and then just shows up at the end to convert the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Rey's stuff is awful. Chloe's plot is awful. Just do a Lewis Gossett cut of this movie and cut out these terrible characters from the previous movies.
You know, we talked about at the end of... Is it the end of Tribulation Force where he comes in while they're singing How Great Thou Art?
Yes.
And he comes in on the, you know, they hit the word savior so hard.
Yes.
Like, they're still playing Buck like that. Like, he is the one who goes and converts the president and sends him off on his, you know, suicide run at Nikolai Carpathia. But, like, at this point, it's like all he does. It's, you know, it's like a really weird character that actually doesn't fit the rest of the movie.
All right, let's do final thoughts about World at War, the last of the Left Behind trilogy.
Okay, don't get me wrong. They're not very good. I do think this was the best of them. It's still pretty terrible.
I'm going to read a quote from Todd Hertz, a writer from Christianity Today.
Oh, man. Christianity Today did not have a good thing to say about the remake.
He says, "Many times I caught myself thinking of this movie as 24, with less action and more prayer time." I think he's right on the money.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking about 24 as we watched this. Like, if the first Left Behind, which was made in 2000, before 24 was a show, because 24 started right before 9/11, and then had to change entirely for the sake of 9/11, that movie, the first one, was kind of like a world-trotting James Bond kind of thing. This one feels like a kind of a Christian version of 24, right down to, like, African-American president who's kind of an action hero, even down to the camera work, where the camera's kind of shaky.
Going into a little underground bunker and saying, there's going to be an attack within days.
There's going to be an attack within days. We found out from the global satellite.
Yeah. It's the makers of this movie watched 24, and we're like, hey, we're going to make this into this movie. Here's even more evidence of this. There's a section on Wikipedia that says, differences from the novel. Now, some of the things that happen in this movie that do happen in the novels are that Buck and Chloe and Rayford and Amanda get married, Bruce dies, and there's a plot with the U.S. president heading an attack with Britain and Egypt against the global community. Here are some major parts of the movie that were not in any of the books. The poisoning of Bibles by Nikolai, not in the books. An attempt by Fitzhugh to assassinate Nikolai, not in the books. Buck's meeting with the president is in the books, but in the movie it's totally different. In the movie, Nikolai Carpathia, the main antagonist, is portrayed almost as a supernatural being, displaying supernatural powers against his enemy. This is most clearly shown at the end, with Carpathia walks out completely undamaged from the wreckage of a building that was literally blown into pieces. None of that is in the books. All of that is in this movie.
So what you're saying is the movies are vastly superior to the books.
I guess so. But so much of, like, the 24-style action of this movie is made for the movie.
Well, we're at the end of it, Matt. We've come through our 2 months of tribulation.
We have.
I'm not going to lie. I'm glad to see it gone.
Me too. Would you recommend World at War to people?
I actually would recommend that they go watch the conversion scene. Just look at how great Louis Gossett Jr. is in that scene. Louis Gossett Jr., very underappreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not my favorite Louis Gossett Jr. movie. My favorite Louis Gossett Jr. movie is obviously the music video for Never Say Die, Iron Eagle. Sure. The theme from Iron Eagle, which he appears in. I would not recommend the movie as a whole, no, because it's terrible.
That's kind of how I feel about it, too. If there was a supercut of the best Lou Gossett moments from this movie, then I'd be like, go watch that.
Yeah, you could make a really entertaining YouTube video out of this movie. Let me ask you a question, Matt. Has this experience, watching these four movies, changed your religious views at all?
Gonna say no. They're the same. What about you, Chris? Any change of heart?
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, I guess we're ending about where we started then, in terms of our own hearts and souls. Maybe you changed. Let us know if you did. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Movie Fighters. We'll be starting, maybe we'll do a palate cleanser before we start anything new. We'll see.
Matt, the last time we tried to do a palate cleanser, we talked for 18 hours about RoboCop.
Hey, that's a good time for me.
Fair enough.
That's a good time. All right, everybody, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening to our Left Behind series on Movie Fighters. Please go check out our website, which is moviefighterscast.com. If you would like to send us an email with a movie suggestion or anything else, you can do that at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. Our music is by Michael Kill. Our website was designed by Sean Bogus. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been a Kaleidos Media production.